Andrew Lee is the author of the book. He's sitting there. I'm looking at him. It's The Economics of Just About Everything. That's what it's called. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Red.
I couldn't help noticing Dr. Carl has given it his blessing. Essential reading for the 21st century, he says.
Well, it's a great honour to be given the pat on the shoulder by the great Dr. Carlin.
Well, he's just thinking, I don't have to think of anything new for the next year. There's my program material for the next year.
Well, I mean, essentially, this is trying to do a little bit for economics of what Carl's done so wonderfully for science. To say, this is a discipline that can help us understand a fascinating world a little bit more.
It would be fair to say this is a book for Australian circumstances, surely inspired by Freakonomics.
Absolutely hit the nail on the head.
Which was a terrific read. And similarly, your own book is examines similar sorts of questions in a more Australian context, perhaps. Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Can a perfectly clean desk be as inefficient as a messy one?
Well, I think so. And the risk with advocating perfectly clean desks, as Marius Kloppers did when he sent around a memo to BHP staff in 2012, is that you forget that cleaning up your desk has costs as well as benefits. It's nice to have a smooth surface there, but you have to spend a lot of time putting stuff away.
Yeah, I would actually argue the reverse proposition, that a messy desk is an example of somebody with a very orderly mind.
Ah, this is the old messy desk, clean mind kind of philosophy.
Yeah. I hesitate to say clean mind, just orderly.
Economics generally thinks, Red, that the ideal solution doesn't tend to sit at either extreme. And so, you know, when we're thinking about dating, we tend to think it's probably not optimal to date throughout your life, and it's probably not optimal to marry the first person that you date. And similarly with desks, we think that perfect cleanliness and perfect messiness are probably both problematic.
Where I hit the roadblock, you went into my area.
I know, I was hoping you'd come to this.
This is to do with the business of creativity, and more specifically, musicians.
Mm.
I sensed from the proposition that there are people who consider Nick Cave possibly to be a genius. Are you amongst that number?
I think he's pretty extraordinary. I mean, you've reinvented yourself over a course of a number of careers. But if you look at Nick Cave's success, his albums have done better and better as he's gotten older, and that contrasts very much with a different style of creative artist. Think of Silverchair, AC/DC, who have a lot of hits early on. And whose work is driven by a single idea. And so, in the book, I split creativity into conceptualists, mm-hmm. who are driven by a single grand idea and do their best work very young,
mm-hmm.
in Silverchair's case, when they're 15, and experimentalists, who are inspired by the world around them and who do their better work, their best work later in life.
So Nick Cave is an experimentalist.
Nick Cave's an experimentalist, Cold Chisel, Midnight Oil. Now, I'm guessing Skyhooks would have been conceptualists, but you'd know better than me which box we might try
to
put them in.
Can I say, in regard to Nick Cave, there's a point of agreement between us. I think his best work is yet to come, and I think he's as relevant today as he was back then.
Which is an extraordinary thing to say about a 55-year-old musician.
And deeply ironic, if you actually unpack what I just said.
All right.
How do you have time to do this when you're supposed to be looking after the parliament because you're the member for Fraser?
I have a very, very tolerant family and a wonderful staff around me. And, you know, one of the things that I think you ought to do if you come into Parliament as a former professor is not to entirely jettison your previous career. You know, I think of politics as the confluence of power and ideas, and my kind of role in politics, my comparative advantage, to use economic terms, is to keep on bringing some of those ideas in. So the economics of just about everything is an attempt to do some of that.
One final irony from somebody who's in arguably a creative sphere, me, I think it's ironic that you couldn't make any money in economics, so now you're writing a book. Good luck with that.
Well, you know, economics is a wonderful discipline, and it provides extraordinary intellectual stimulation. I think there's things that economics can teach us about losing weight, about finding a lover, about choosing the best AFL team, or indeed about better understanding the factors driving crime.
It's nice to have the science behind economics applied to something more useful than money.
Indeed. And the problem is that we've often taught economics as being sort of all about the gold price. And that's such a narrow slice of what economics can do. I think it's a useful discipline, for example, in helping recognise why a third of Australians struggle with their weight. That's because the benefits of a jam donut come right now, but the costs come in weeks in advance. So the challenge for us is to help people do that cost-benefit analysis by bringing up some of the costs up front.
In a rational way, yes.
Exactly.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
Andrew Lee, author of the book The Economics of Just About Everything, which is a kind of Freakonomics for Australian conditions.